The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, radio program of record. So nice to have you here this Thursday, or as Philip J. calls it, Friday Eve, this 25th day of July. We have our text line and phone line open. It's the same number, 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. Every day for the last few weeks, we've been opening the show talking about the latest national news, the latest political upheaval, the latest shocking announcement. And we do have a lot of incredible news that's happening nationally. But I got to start with a stolen fire truck.
Man, another example in Seattle, right?
It wasn't stolen for very long because the thief apparently didn't know how to release the parking brake.
Had a certain amount of ineptitude.
But again, this is just a picture-perfect snapshot of everything that is wrong with Seattle and the criminal justice system. Listen to Denise Whitaker's report here from Como 4.
Thankfully, Engine 26 is back in service here in the South Park neighborhood. Listen to firefighters call for help.
We just had someone try to steal our fire engine.
Fire Engine 26 stolen from right here outside the Arrowhead Gardens apartments while her crew was treating a patient. Seattle police tell us a man rode up on a scooter, then drove off with the fire engine, lights flashing, the siren blaring.
Fire is requesting an expedited response. He did see a fire crew attempting to chase after him.
Seattle police found and arrested a 22-year-old man rather quickly. His rap sheet goes back to his teenage years and includes 12 convictions for stealing cars, firearms, and other items. He's also got pending charges against him right now. One is for stealing a vehicle.
Okay. You heard right. 12 convictions. He's 22. Why is he out?
And if all of those came as a majority age adult after 18, he's basically racking up 3 a year.
Why is he out?
4 years, 12 convictions, 12 divided by 4 equals 3. So he's racking up 3 crimes per year, convictions, and he's got others pending now.
Yeah, I mean, let's do the final 15 seconds or so of Denise's report so she can, you know, again, give us the goods on this guy. Obviously, this is someone who steals things.
Thankfully,
for the fun of it.
Try and cue this up here. Here we go.
His response. He did see a fire crew attempting to chase after him.
Seattle police found and arrested a 22-year-old man rather quickly. His rap sheet goes back to his teenage years and includes 12 convictions for stealing cars, firearms, and other items. He's also got pending charges against him right now. One is for stealing a vehicle.
Now, we hear a lot about keeping guns out of the wrong hands and the need to crack down on gun violence. How do you think people who are not legally allowed to own a firearm get firearms?
We've passed all kinds of laws to prevent that, right?
I don't think they go to Cabela's. I don't think they go to, you know, shooting ranges that have firearms for sale. They don't go to any licensed dealer at a gun show or at any retail outlet. They usually buy them on the black market. How do those guns get on the black market? Well, they're either brought here from out of state or they are stolen. So the crime of committing a firearm is you're actually aiding and abetting the proliferation of gun violence. So the penalty for stealing a firearm should be severe. It is not severe. It's just another item you've stolen. They look at its economic value. And then, of course, you have the other convictions for stealing cars and the like. Again, this guy is 22 and he has 12 convictions. Convictions, not 12 arrests, 12 convictions. Again, I ask, what's he doing out? Why are people who do things like this continuing to do things like this? Maybe because we don't punish things like this. Maybe because it's, again, in the world criminals live in, it's all about consequences. So if there are no consequences, why would you stop?
Yeah, I mean, Democrats are always saying they're the party of science, but apparently not behavioral science. B.F. Skinner,
you know,
psychology.
Just if you say that you can't do that, you say, well, what if I do that? Oh, nothing. Then why wouldn't he do that? This is driven home by our entire experience with this ridiculous diversion program for juvenile delinquents. I meant to say at-risk children.
Yeah, right. And this is something you spent a big chunk of yesterday's show on.
Because there's this, you know, big article about why are so many children being shot? Well, they're being shot by other, air quotes, children, because there are very few penalties, very few consequences for committing lower-level crimes, so they graduate to upper-level crimes. There's next to no penalties for illegal gun possession. And so if the consequences, again, never mind the words on paper about you've broken the law, you have violated the following criminal statutes, never mind the words on paper, never mind the finger wagging from judges or the words from counselors about how this is, you know, you're heading down the wrong path. Never mind the words. Just what are the consequences? Because if they're not there, why would you expect someone who's willing to do bad things to stop doing bad things if there's no consequences for doing bad things? 22 years old, 12 convictions. Why not steal a fire engine? Why not? And, you know, I'm glad that they got it before he hurt someone, ran over someone, smashed into other vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. But this is one more example of a system that has gone very, very wrong. Oh, boy, do we have a lot of things we need to get to today. People are taking out their anger and frustrations on ferry boat employees. Some reasons for that coming up here on The Commute. And again, I've got to wonder, why isn't this a major issue in the race for governor? This all happened on Jay Inslee's watch. We have seen a plummeting of ferry boats in service because of deferred maintenance. We've seen a shortage of crews. Dozens and dozens of ferry employees were fired for not getting a COVID vaccination. Why weren't they asked back on the job? Why haven't we aggressively recruited them to get them back? The ferry service right now not only is probably in worse shape than it's ever been, but they say, yeah, it's probably going to be this way for the next 4 years or so. That's how you know this is a government-run service. If you want to see socialism in action, it's our ferry boat service. This is what socialism looks like. There's no private competition. I mean, yeah, there's a couple of small passenger, you know, ferries and whatnot, and there's the ferry boat to Victoria and all that. But that's more for tourists. But in terms of our ferry boat service, which is the nation's largest, it's part of the Department of Transportation, and it is completely government-run. Government runs the vessels. Government sets the schedules. Government sets the price. The government services and maintains the ferry boats. If you want to see what socialism looks like, show up when there's a four-hour wait to go from West Seattle to Vashon Island, or a three-hour wait to go from Edmonds to the peninsula, or to Whidbey Island. It's abject, complete, total failure. This is, again, we were talking just a minute ago about accountability and consequences. There's no consequences for lousy ineptitude, for lousy service and complete ineptitude. Check out this story here from Q13. This is from Alejandra Guzman about the numerous problems we're having with the ferry system.
For nearly three decades, our ferries have been underfunded, with many vessels mothballed due to over $250 million in deferred maintenance. Currently, only 15 ferries are in service out of the 26 we should have.
If it's running on time, great. If it's
15 in service for the 26 that we should have. Now, the one area I'll take issue with Alejandra Guzman, she said, well, it's all about they're underfunded. They're not underfunded. If you look at ferry service funding, it's been going up and up and up. It's horribly managed. So other than missing that rather large point, Let's continue.
It's not. You just be flexible.
Back in the day, folks used to set their watch by the ferry schedule. They were on time. Commuters could get to work, school, doctor's appointments, or just hop on for a joyride. That's not the case anymore. Last year, riders saw over 3,500 cancellations, tons of delays, causing them to be late or miss tasks.
Good afternoon. Working to fix our ferries.
Greg Nance, a candidate for the 23rd District, including the Bremerton, Bainbridge, and Kingston ferries, is taking this issue personally.
We've got $80 million in the budget for more crew and more maintenance.
He's been out canvassing at ferry terminals. He says it's simple. We know we need more crew, more maintenance, and more boats.
All of this is actually connected. If we want to make the right environmental investments, actually having new ferries helps us to better protect our environment.
Okay, these new ferries, the electric ferries that he's talking about, cost more than three times what a regular ferry is. When we are not spending enough on maintenance and on service, why would we be spending three times more on an electric ferry?
Having a strong workforce helps us to reliably operate those ferries.
The issue making waves in our gubernatorial race is Bob Ferguson is now promising to fix the failing system, expediting diesel ferries, with Dave Reichert criticizing him for claiming ideas that aren't his.
I was personally disappointed to hear Bob Ferguson's plan to purchase diesel-powered ferries. I think we need to be moving away from reliance on fossil fuels and not building another generation of ferries that are going to be reliant on them. And also, I think abandoning this electrification effort midway will just result in further delays.
Further delays? It takes longer to build those ferries. So, she doesn't know what she is talking about. But again, this is someone who's not concerned about delivering passengers on time for the lowest cost, possible cost. They're worried about making an environmental statement, you know, damn the costs.
As the back and forth continues, it's not an issue 23rd District candidate Bryn Felix says is top of mind for her or voters.
Okay, so it's all about deferred maintenance. How many times have we done these stories about government having problems because they didn't do the maintenance? The holes in the West Seattle Bridge, remember at one point you could see through from the ground, you could see through the concrete, the bridge, the West Seattle Bridge? Deferred maintenance. Oops, we didn't do the maintenance according to the schedule that we were supposed to. Remember the West Point sewage overflows. Oops. Apparently, we weren't servicing the facility on the right timetable, doing the right things the right way. You see the same thing with automobiles. If you don't service and maintain your car, you're going to have problems. And when it comes to service and maintenance, government often gives short shrift to that because, well, that's below ground. That's not something that's visible. So apparently, if it's below ground, it's less important. So this entire problem that we have with our ferry system, with the shortage of employees, that's a man-made problem exacerbated by Jay Inslee firing and refusing, when COVID was in the rearview mirror, to hire them back. He should have hired them back and apologized. The deferred maintenance, that's just a question of priority. Nobody in this entire report, nobody is talking, the state legislator, the activist, no one's talking about management. You don't get effective, efficient management when you don't have accountability for not providing effective, efficient management. It's just that simple. It's so simple. It is 21 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the morning's first social media sweep. Listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. Yes, we'll be doing another edition of Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest at 8:05 this morning. Good morning. 26 minutes after 6 o'clock. Yeah, you thought Ringo Starr was the first one to do this song, didn't you? No, that was a cover. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III doesn't cover anyone, has fresh original
content. I cover people like a blanket.
All his own. He covers the issues.
Call me Vandervoort Island over here. Single man coverage.
What do we got?
Enough sports references here. Let's get to the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I know you're going to get into a couple of moments from the Biden national address last night. He had one that caught my attention, and I'm going to play the clip from Biden. I'm going to tell you why this is all a little bit curious with a post, a story that I found from CNN. So let's start with what Biden said last night. He was bragging that he's the only 21st century president to not have any Americans at war. Here's what he said.
I'm the first president in this century to report to the American people that the United States is not at war anywhere in the world.
If we're not at war anywhere in the world, why are we giving hundreds of millions of dollars to Ukraine for a proxy war, dude?
His argument would be, so we won't have Americans at war in the world. We're having them do the fighting.
I guess it's hyper-technical, but it also kind of ignores what's going on between Israel and Hamas and the U.S. Yes. supporting Israel materially as well. But then here's the CNN story. Yesterday, according to CNN, and this has been reported by numerous other outlets as well, the United States and Canada military jets intercepted Russian and Chinese bombers operating together near Alaskan airspace. And it's kind of described as a first type of intercept, at least between Russia and Chinese military jets or aircraft near Alaska. And this has been a procedure from Cold War era of flying jets at the enemy and then turning back at the last second. So, you know, we've got Biden withdrawing at the last second, bringing to mind all kinds of questions of, who's really in charge, amongst other things. And here's Russia and Chinese military aircraft that are pushing the envelope at the edge of Alaskan airspace and United States airspace. So, there's another example of this Biden comment last night where, you know, he's using the technical, but it's really not a practical answer at all about what's really going on. I'll give you a couple examples that I'm seeing on social media related to this incredible amount of vandalism that took place yesterday in the name of Palestine. Back in Washington, D.C., Benjamin Netanyahu's at Congress to speak to a joint session of Congress. A bunch of Democrats decide they're not going to attend. Meanwhile, all kinds of pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, anti-Israeli protesters spray-painted and destroyed stuff. And the most glaring example I saw of this is the spray-painted words, "Hamas is coming," spray-painted across the bottom of a statue in red spray paint. There's a Freedom Bell of some kind in Washington, D.C. that's also next to this monument that was spray-painted.
I think it's a replica of the Liberty Bell from Philadelphia.
It's completely covered. It's completely covered in spray paint
with vulgar
and that, you know, super mega marker.
Yeah.
And it's repeatedly says F Israel or abolish Israel on the this Freedom Bell replica from Philadelphia. And I'm going to be thrilled to hear Democrats decrying this vandalism, but I don't think I've heard any yet.
Well, no, this is Washington, D.C. This is their town.
And these are the same Democrats that refuse to show up to listen to Netanyahu speak to Congress.
We'll be talking a little bit more about this. And by the way, Netanyahu was tough on the protesters, certainly tougher than anyone in the nation's capital. They let them vandalize these statues. They let them vandalize that Liberty Bell. They let them steal American flags and did nothing while they were burning the flag they stole. More on this as we got a very busy program and we transition from local to national on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. 25 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Was that Muddy Waters, young Zach?
Howlin' Wolf.
Howlin' Wolf. All right. Very good. Great way to start a Thursday morning. Let us go to Washington, D.C. You just heard Philip J. Vandervoort III talk about what was going on outside the Capitol while Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was speaking to a joint session of Congress, minus the vice president, who would not appear. Neither did a couple of dozen other members of Congress, including Senator Patty Murray, who is the Senate pro tempore because she's been there for over 30 years, and Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal who would have had to sit there and listen to someone say nice things about Israel, and that can be very annoying to her. What is interesting about Patty Murray said she was boycotting because she wants an immediate ceasefire between Hamas and Israel. Notice she doesn't say she wants a victory for Israel. She wants just a ceasefire. Okay, what happens when when you have a ceasefire, only one side stops firing? Do you still have a ceasefire? Why did Patty Murray talk about a ceasefire without demanding that Hamas hand back over the hostages that they seized on October 7th? By the way, which includes five Americans. No? Didn't catch her attention? Anyway, they missed a good speech. Not that it would have mattered. They already have their minds made up, so to speak. Benjamin Netanyahu relayed some very important truths that a lot of people who think of themselves as really smart, like students on elite college campuses and professors on elite college campuses and administrators on elite college campuses, they think they're really smart. No, here's how dumb and foolish they really are. Again, this is Prime Minister Netanyahu.
They refuse to make the simple distinction between those who target terrorists and those who target civilians, between the Democratic State of Israel and the terrorist thugs of Hamas. We recently learned from the National Security Director of National Intelligence, that Iran is funding and promoting anti-Israel protests in America. They want to disrupt America. So these protesters burn American flags even on the 4th of July. And I wish to salute the fraternity brothers at the University of North Carolina who protected the American flag against these anti-Israel protesters.
By the way, while he was speaking and praising the fraternity brothers at the University of North Carolina, an American flag was stolen off a flagpole at Union Station, which is just behind the U.S. Capitol, and burned it. Burned U.S. flag that they stole while the Capitol Police simply watched and did nothing. Watched and did nothing. Anyway, there's your irony of the day. Let's continue with Netanyahu.
For all we know, Iran is funding the anti-Israel protests that are going on right now outside this building. Not that many, but they're there and throughout the city. Well, I have a message for these protesters. When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
I love this. Good for him. By the way, show me a college president who showed that kind of courage to say the obvious. Again, what he is saying is true. What he's saying is factually true. We now know that Iran has been funding radical pro-Palestinian, which means anti-American and anti-Israel, activism in the United States. He then proceeded to call out how functionally illiterate these activists and these professors and these administrators are when they talk about the Israel-Hamas conflict.
These protesters chant from the river to the sea, but many don't have a clue what river and what sea they're talking about. They not only get an F in geography, they get an F in history. They call Israel a colonialist state. Don't they know that the land of Israel is where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob prayed, where Isaiah and Jeremiah preached, and where David and Solomon ruled?
And where Jesus walked too, Prime Minister. Oh, wait, he's not down with the program on that part. But bottom line, yes, what he's saying is absolutely true. And in fact, when you read Jeremiah, when you read Isaiah, when you read the prophet Daniel, they talk about how when Israel was essentially kidnapped, kicked out of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, they eventually were able to get free, thank you, King Cyrus of Persia, and they returned to Israel. They always come back to Jerusalem. They always come back to what was then called Judah. They came back to their homeland. They are the last people you can call colonizers. But again, if you're secular and really dumb when it comes to history, you won't catch that fact.
It's not only the campus protesters who get it wrong. It's also the people who run those campuses.
Yes.
80 years after the Holocaust, 80 years after the Holocaust, the presidents of Harvard, Penn, and I'm ashamed to say my alma mater, MIT, couldn't bring themselves to condemn the calls for the genocide of Jews. You remember what they said? They said, it depends on the context. Well, let me give these befuddled academics a little context.
I love this guy. The left hates him for this very reason.
Is the world's oldest hatred. For centuries, the massacre of Jews was always preceded by wild accusations. Mm-hmm. We were accused of everything from poisoning wells, to spreading plagues, to using the blood of slaughtered children to bake Passover matzos. These preposterous anti-Semitic lies led to persecution, mass murder, and ultimately to history's worst genocide, the Holocaust. Now, just as malicious lies were leveled for centuries at the Jewish people, malicious lies are now being leveled at the Jewish state.
What a great line. And he's absolutely correct. And this whole notion of, oh, we're not against Jewish people. We're just against the state of Israel. Don't even try. Don't even try. That is so pathetic and so ridiculous. You know, I'm not against Americans. I'm just not crazy about America. The fact that Hamas has made it very clear that when they take control of Israel, that Jews will not be welcome there, should tell you everything you need to know about the link between Jewry, Jews, and Zionism, the belief in an Israeli homeland for the Jews. Anyway, there's a great leader. There's someone who is, though I think he can be faulted for not anticipating and being ready to deter and aggressively counterattack Hamas going back to October 7th. But the fact is, the only reason this war is still going on, they're saying, oh, Netanyahu's trying to prolong it to stay in office. No, he's not trying to prolong it. If we would leave him alone, he would have been done by now. If we would have left him alone instead of second-guessing, remember at one point we withheld weapons from the Israelis and said, oh, you can't go into Rafah. Rafah was where Hamas hunkered down, the southernmost major city in Gaza, the Gaza Strip between Israel and Egypt. They hunkered down in the southernmost town, and we were telling them to just leave them there, to not go after them. It was just nuts. It's just crazy. Anyway, they eventually made their way there. They have suffered many, many Israeli military casualties because they have given up the element of surprise in fighting the war, because we keep telling that you have to give them fair warning. There could be civilians get in the way. It's because Hamas is deliberately putting them in the way. But again, if we would let Israel finish the job and wipe out Hamas as a threat to the region, that war would have been over by now. It's 6:48. Our good friend, Lars Larson, noon to three host, right around the corner on the commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, 7 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Here's my buddy, Lars Larson, this morning. How are you, Lars?
I'm doing great, John, but it is such a target-rich environment. Where do you want to go? Because we could talk about the 7-year-old with a hatchet on the Seattle bus and the plans to try to close the King County Juvenile Detention Center, or erasing Kamala Harris' record that she was ever border czar, with the media running around like it's 1984, the novel, saying she was never border czar.
Oh, I know.
She never had that job.
We are going to play a montage of the media describing her as the border czar just a year or two ago, and yep. now saying she was never the border czar. I mean, it's just comical. The same networks are saying this, the same newspapers, Axios, saying that she was never the border czar, are now saying, we're saying back then that she was the border czar. Oh, it's funny. In fact, here, I am going to play part of it.
This Go is ahead.
The montage of media networks saying that she was and now flipped and are saying she wasn't. Have a listen. This is from Newsbusters, from Media Research Center.
Quote, unquote, border czar. Vice President Harris was not a border czar.
Meantime, Vice President and border czar Kamala Harris facing some backlash.
What he said about Harris and immigration was not true. She was never appointed border czar.
And this will be her first visit to the U.S.-Mexico border region since she was appointed as the border czar by President Biden.
People going to have to counter the misinformation. You already hear folks talking about the border czar. She wasn't the border czar.
President Biden tapped Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, to be
this
the
is
border
nuts.
Czar.
Now, she wasn't the border czar. That's what...
Do you know what they're doing, John? John, your audience, I think, knows this, but there is no such thing as a czar. There never has been. I mean,
right.
in Russia there
it's
were.
It's a term.
But it's a not, term to right. describe a person who's been put in charge of a problem, right?
Right.
And so we use it, government uses it, and we refer it. But if you want to say technically, did she ever hold the title of border czar? No. Well, was she assigned the job, and was she described as the person in charge of that problem? Because
yes.
And these are weird positions anyway, because they're not confirmed by the Congress. They're appointed by the president. So the president appoints somebody and says, you're in charge of this problem, and he doesn't have to go through Congress. He doesn't have to create a law. He just does it. But I think for problems like this, if you had a Katrina czar, I don't think there ever was one, but after the hurricane, you could have appointed a Katrina czar. You can have a czar for any of that. And all they're saying is
remember,
she never held the title.
And that's why she was the one down in Central America and South America who was getting to the root of the problem of illegal, of why people were coming here. Well, they're coming here because somebody opened the gate and left it open. Is why they were, there's your root cause. Anyway, thank you very much, Lars Larson. Hour number two of The Commute with Carlson right around the corner. 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, right where you need to be. We got a lot of stuff in front of us we'll be talking about. There was a reference to a 7-year-old boy with a hatchet on a bus. Seattle police, another interesting story about how our great juvenile justice system deters unlawful activity. 10 juveniles robbed a group of 5 other kids on a metro bus near Green Lake. We will talk about the story a little later on this hour, but it's another case of crime committed on mass transit in Seattle. And you know perfectly well that the people who the children who perpetrated this attack have, how do I put this, prior experience with the juvenile justice system. But we'll get into that a little later this hour. We will also carry some of what Joe Biden had to say last night. He just rambled on for about 11 minutes, could have said it all in about 2 or 3. We will also address the issue of Kamala Harris and the first bill she introduced as a senator. She's only been a senator since 2017, before she was a candidate for president 2 years later, and then, of course, vice president. But a lot of people forget what her first bill was, I will tell you. I want to start local, however, because, again, history continues to be made. KVI listeners right in the red-hot center of it. Initiative 2066, the Natural Gas Initiative, has officially qualified for the November ballot. Person responsible for that, ladies and gentlemen, as our live studio audience very much percolating here, hearing that great news. Brian Haywood from Let's Go Washington. He joins me for a few minutes here on the John Carlson Show this morning. Hello, Brian Haywood. How are you, sir?
Good morning. We're doing fantastic. It's 7 a.m. We're 7 for 7.
7 for 7. 7 initiatives tried, 7 initiatives qualified. 3 of them have already been made law because the Democrats were petrified that they would be on the ballot with their candidates. So they said, fine, we'll take your initiative that outlaws an income tax at any level of any kind in the state of Washington. Fine, we'll take your initiative on people have a right to know, parents have a right to know what's going on in their kids' public school. Okay, fine, we'll even strike down our own anti-police chase statute. We don't want that one on the ballot either. So that leaves 3 initiatives that remain on the ballot. And then as of yesterday afternoon, Secretary of State's office announcing that Initiative 2066, the natural gas initiative, will be there as well. That one's got to feel especially good, Brian.
That it does. Well, and the amount of support we had on that one was really overwhelming. So it wasn't a surprise, but it feels really good to have it in the bank.
Again, because KVI listeners were along for the ride every single day. It was trying to gather support, and we were looking. We had 327,000 signatures, which means we were aiming for 400,000 signatures, but we only had 48 days to do it. When all was said and done, you know, after day of promotion, day after day of rallying, of events, et cetera, 546,000 signatures came in the door, were turned into the Secretary of State's office. And Brian, I didn't know this until last night. Another 50,000 came in afterwards.
Yeah, it's not quite 50 yet, but we're going to be close. I mean, they're still coming in. We're still open envelopes.
So there is almost 600,000 signatures in about 50 days.
It's incredible.
It is.
There were some interesting numbers, too. I don't have it finalized yet, but it looks like the independent Democrat mix was even higher on 2066. We were over 60% independent and Democrat on this one.
Well, I want to read what some of the critics of the initiative are saying. My personal favorite, this is the Washington State Democratic Party. So this is the voice of the State Democratic Party. They are calling Initiative 2066 pro-pollution, pro-childhood asthma. Pro-carbon pollution, pro-childhood asthma. Other critics are saying this would be Caitlin Krenn. She's from the Washington Conservation Action. Not Washington Conservative Action, Washington Conservation Action, calls Initiative 2066, quote, a broad attack on energy efficiency and clean energy programs that will ensure special interests continue to profit off our communities for decades to come, close quote. What say you, Brian?
Well, it's funny. These exact same people forced us to pay 2 or 3 times the normal cost of a bus or of a garbage truck to switch to the clean, what they call the clean energy natural gas.
Clean burning.
Just a few years ago.
Yeah, that's so correct. These are the same activists who were cheerleading and demanding a conversion from diesel or gasoline to clean burning natural gas. You can still see the slogan emblazoned on a lot of, you know, government trucks, garbage trucks, buses, delivery trucks, etc. That's a great point, Brian.
I think while the ferries never went to natural gas, it's this same ideology that doesn't give you good results. It's promoting something that everybody agrees with, which is we all want to live in a clean world with clean air and clean water, and nobody wants asthma. But it's the same ideology that's being promoted that's also the reason that people are having huge, huge delays in the ferries out in San Juan County. And they're getting hit by a stupidity that says we would rather We're going to do something so that we feel good, but it may mean that we don't have any ferries for 5 years, and they're going to cost five times as much as the diesel ferries cost, and they may or may not be as reliable, the commuter be damned.
Yeah, that's what it all gets down to, the commuter be damned. What I love about Initiative 2066 is that instead of just stopping a bad bill, it actually proactively goes further and seizes power from the government, i.e. the power to decide whether people have natural gas or not, and puts it in the hand not of a different level of government, it puts it directly in the hands of consumers themselves.
Yeah, at the very basic level, the question that everybody should be asking themselves is, why should the government be telling or dictating to us what we can and can't use to heat our homes? And I think that's one of the another answer back to the critics. They pretend like, oh, people are forced to use natural gas in their home. No, at any time they can change. If they don't want natural gas, they can switch and they can change their appliances. What I don't like is the government forcing people to make that change. And that's a huge difference between our position and the position of the opposition. That sounded funny.
Yes.
We want people to have a choice what energy they use. And especially if you go talk to Indian restaurants or Chinese restaurants, a switch from natural gas to all electric kills their business.
Well, they can't do it. They can't prepare their particular menu items on an electric stove. They need natural gas. Every restaurant I know of prefers natural gas.
Any chef, anybody that cooks good food.
Yeah,
not vegans. I don't want I don't want the vegans to hate me. But anyone that cooks tasty food, they're doing it with natural gas.
Well, and by the way, let's also remind our listeners: this isn't just natural gas. This is also propane.
Correct, which means barbecue and weekends and
yeah.
Try getting that steak just right on a nicely seared electric grill.
And some folks in rural areas, propane is what they got for their homes, too.
And so, propane is also a backup energy generator gas, mm-hmm. right? Natural gas fills that role as well. But when you talk to people, when I went over to Spokane and on the other side of the mountains where they get much colder winters than we do over here, people were just in shock. That they would even be considered to get rid of natural gas.
Well,
when the power goes down, when the electric power grid goes down, that's life-saving, right? It's not just a nice to have, it's a lifesaver.
Well, ultimately they're at war with themselves. They are demanding that we make changes such as, for instance, all electric cars that will result in a huge increase in electricity demand on the power grid. But then they are trying to reduce the types of energy that powers the grid.
There's a certain amount of arrogance in it too. Like so you're exactly right. They're gonna overload the grid if it happened. But even before we get there, they're saying sort of a let them eat cake, let them drive Teslas is their policy. And I've gotten into discussions with people, and they said, and I'll point out how expensive a Tesla is, and their response is, well, you can find an electric car now for $34,000. It's really cheap. And I don't know. They've never been in a situation where $5,000 is the most expensive car you can afford, and that's you're going to buy the cheapest thing you can to get back and forth to work because you got to work.
Yeah.
You can't afford a $34,000 EV that has to charge overnight.
No, that's a fair point. Again, that's just another reason why this is not just an energy issue. I think Brian's pointing out this is also a culture issue. This is the elites versus the ordinary. This is the elites versus everyday Washington voters and workers. And it's the same thing, by the way, if you don't mind me extrapolating here, Brian, with Initiative 2117. The elites want to virtue signal and create more expensive gasoline, which will generate money that they can spend on what they call clean energy programs, but which are often just, you know, increasing the size and scope of government. 43 cents a gallon may not matter much to Steve and Connie Ballmer, who have donated $2,500,000 to oppose Initiative 2117. Bill Gates, who's tossed in a million. But you know what?
Who's jet fuel? Their jet fuel was exempted from the CCA.
That's right. Costs a lot of money getting here between here and LA to watch the Clippers, the team that Steve owns. So, bottom line here is this really is, again, the elites versus the everyday and ordinary Washington voter. And so this is more than just about your pocketbook. It's also about telling the elites, stop messing things up. Stop screwing things up. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. There was the poll. I don't know if you saw the poll that Seattle Times and King 5 did, but it included each of the four initiatives, looked at the popularity, and everyone's in shock that the people that are strongly voting yes on all four of them is significantly higher than those that are strongly voting no. Mm-hmm. But one of the things to me that was the most interesting is somebody did a breakdown of the capital gains repeal, and people that are making like under, can't remember what it was, $50,000, overwhelmingly supported the repeal of capital gains.
Yeah.
And I think it's this arrogance, of the elite is that we can stick it to the rich guys and no one will care. But if you're not rich, you're aspirational. Mm-hmm. You want, and you probably understand your job comes from someone that has money, but you're also aspirational that you can get there someday and you don't want the door closed.
And let us remind people that there's already been legislation in Olympia to lower the threshold for capital gains from $250,000 to
$15,000.
Anyway, Brian, we only have a minute, and I think we want to let people know they need to keep a certain day on their calendar open next month.
They do. August 17th, we're going to have the Freedom Fest with part two. We had one last year at my ranch, for anybody that remembers that. And I believe a famous radio host is going to be there.
Your favorite, as it turns out. That's
my
right.
Favorite, as it turns out.
Saturday, August 17th. Ladies and gentlemen, put it down on your calendar right now. Saturday, August 17th, Freedom Fest, a celebration of freedom and these initiatives and everyone who believes in them is going to happen. It's going to happen in Redmond at Brian Haywood's ranch. We are expecting a crowd of 5,000, so we're already planning to accommodate a crowd of that size. We've got lots of guests and lots of great features. It's going to be a family-friendly event. So just put it down on your calendar now, Saturday, August 17th. Brian, it's going to be a fun time.
It's going to be great. I had somebody come up to me last night and say, oh, I didn't go last year because I had my five-year-old. And I told him, oh, well, you should have brought him. We had a place for the kids to play, and we got bands. So it'll be fun.
Yes, that's bands, B-A-N-D-S. Not bands, B-A-N-S. That's the other side. All right. Thank you, Brian Haywood. It is 21 minutes after 7 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio, 570 KVI. I'm feeling okay this summer day, 25th day of July. Philip J. Vandervoort III, you've got the social media sweep ready to happen. Go for it.
Let me converge two things, something from the Seattle Times and something that President Biden said in his national address last night, the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. We'll start with Biden's weird line about promising in his remaining months in office, win or lose for Kamala Harris. He wants to pursue what he called Supreme Court reform. I'm not even sure what this means, but here's what he said.
I'm going to call for Supreme Court reform because this is critical to our democracy. Supreme Court reform.
So, yeah. Critical to democracy to reverse what's happening at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Very important to save democracy that we politicize the judicial branch of government more than we have already.
We need to recreate it in a fashion which benefits me more politically.
Yeah,
right? He can call for Supreme Court reform. I'm going to call for a pizza. We'll see what shows up faster.
Yeah.
Franklin Roosevelt had an idea of reform. It was called court packing.
Yeah.
In other words, we're losing.
Let's get a bunch more justices on there that'll vote our way.
Let's find some tame judges and ram them through.
So as infuriating as that is to hear from President Biden last night, as he's trying to explain to the nation why he needed to withdraw from the race for re-election, the Seattle Times posted this on social media. And it's some sort of statewide poll that was conducted, but it's paywalled, so I can't get to all of it. It says most Washingtonians believe the Supreme Court is out of touch with American beliefs and values, a feeling that runs deeper among women than men, according to a new statewide poll. So again, this is specific to the state of Washington. And I can't help but read this and think, that's not how you get to validate the Supreme Court or not. The Supreme Court revolves around the Constitution of the United States of America, not your personal feelings, not your personal views.
Yeah, that's...
Take time to read one of their 70 or 80 or 110-page opinions before you start saying, they're out of touch with me.
Well, they are confusing the role of the Supreme Court, which is to interpret the constitutionality of laws. In other words, does this law comply with the Constitution? Yeah. They're confusing that with the legislative and executive branch, which are responsive to popular will.
Most certainly. Yes.
The Constitution was meant as a check and balance on popular democracy. That's what the Bill of Rights are there for.
That's why we call it a republic. We have a constitutional republic, not a straight up democracy. And it's almost like Washington voters didn't learn or get exposed to any basic civics lessons in school when they come up with these sort of responses in a statewide poll.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Yep.
The kids today like to say they've got the receipts when somebody is contradicting themselves or changes their mind and denies that they said something before. And the receipts are starting to come in on things like the Kamala Harris Border Czar thing that you played a half an hour ago with Lars. Christopher Rufo has obtained the WhiteHouse.gov document that goes to the heart of Kamala Harris as a proverbial DEI pick as vice president. Oh. So here's what Christopher Rufo posted. Joe Biden himself declared Kamala Harris the pinnacle of DEI, quote, and this is from the WhiteHouse.gov press release statement from President Biden, quote, the values of diversity, equality, inclusion, that's the DEI part, are literally, and this is not kidding, the core strengths of America, and it starts at the top with the vice president, end quote.
That's the
receipts on that controversy.
That's not a receipt, Phil. That's a smoking gun.
Okay, fine. Yes. Well.
Oh,
said.
My goodness.
Yes. So Christopher Rufo obtained that. Now, the other one that has come up about Kamala Harris's candidacy being elevated to the eventual nominee for president is that as a senator from California, she had acquired ended up with the most liberal voting record amongst all U.S. senators. And one of the writers over at townhall.com is John Hassan, last name H-A-S-S-O-N. And on his social media, John Hassan from Town Hall has discovered that govtrack.us, which tracks those voting records of members of Congress, has changed around Kamala Harris's voting page. And John Hassan writes, genuinely insane that GovTrack deleted Kamala Harris's 2019 Senate report card, all because it showed that she was the most liberal senator. And he's got screen grabs of Google searches that go to the GovTrack website. And now on the GovTrack.us website for GovTrack Kamala Harris 2019, it says page not found. So this would be another example of the Border Czar thing that it appears Democrats and media supporters of Kamala Harris are trying to whitewash or scrub her past to make her look less wildly liberal.
Phil, you don't understand. They have to whitewash her past in order to save democracy.
You said it, man.
When we come back, I'll tell you the first bill that Kamala Harris introduced as a U.S. senator in 2017, which drives home where she's really coming from. And yes, it's relevant to 2024. I promise. Hang on. 7:36, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. By the way, just a reminder, put Saturday, August 17th on your calendar. It's Freedom Fest. It's our Saturday afternoon picnic and celebration of all things good. And it's going to happen in Redmond, Brian Haywood's very spacious ranch. And we are expecting a big crowd. Not too big so that it's a nuisance, but just a big enough crowd where there's going to be lots of food trucks and we're going to have bands playing from the stage. And we're going to have plenty of parking, And we're going to have a play area for the kids, you know, the bouncy stuff and all the other things that kids love. And John Carlson posing for pictures with KVI listeners in front of his Indian motorcycle. And it's just going to be a terrific time. Lots of great guest speakers as well. Hey, it's summertime. Let's celebrate. A lot of good things have happened, and they've happened because of Let's Go Washington. So again, put it on your calendar, August 17th. Also, a reminder, speaking of good things, in about 20 minutes, I'm going to be giving you our secret word of the day for the Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. This week, the trip is to Napa. So at the end of the week, we will be drawing a name from a lucky listener of KVI, some other Lotus radio station. And you've got a much better chance of winning this contest than you do the state lottery. And you know what else? It's cheaper. It's free. All you have to do is text one word to one phone number, 206-421-5757, and you are entered into the contest. All right. We've been talking about Kamala Harris and how the media are now trying to cover for her, and they've been doing it in a rather obvious way. We're going to start with this whole thing about being the border czar. Again, this is what she was given. This is her assignment. You know, Bill Bennett was the drug czar during the Bush era. You have Kamala Harris as vice president was given charge of the border. Like when Hillary Clinton, remember when Hillary Clinton and her husband's administration was the health care czar? She was going to be quarterbacking health care reform. Well, Kamala was put in charge of the border, and she was regularly identified by the media as the border czar. And in fact, when she was being interviewed by Lester Holt of NBC, we might want to call that back up here to play for the listeners. She was down in Guatemala, and she was not there because she was, you know, meeting with South American leaders on trade. She was there as the border czar to discover the root cause of why people were coming to the U.S. border. And of course, it was all for show, because the root cause of the run on the border is that Biden opened the border gates. Just that simple. Anyway, here, when she was with Lester Holt, he was asking her, this goes back to 2021, when are you going to visit the border since you're in charge of the border?
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
I'm here in Guatemala today. At some point, you know, we are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
Okay, everybody else did. Sorry she missed it.
Well, I'm glad you don't, brother, because a lot of people do.
You're in charge of the border. Why haven't you been to the border? She's not in charge of Europe. We don't have a problem with Europeans, you know, sailing across the country to break into the United States. We have people who are breaking into the United States at the southern border. When Kamala Harris was elected to the U.S. Senate, she was elected in 2016. She first took office, of course, in 2017. The first bill that she introduced was to provide taxpayer-financed attorneys to illegal aliens who were trying to delay or obstruct their departure. So the first thing she thought of as a U.S. senator was, how do I make it easier for people jumping the border to do so? How can I run interference for them? Ah, I know. Demand that they be given lawyers. And that was the bill, her first bill that she introduced. Okay, this was not out of character with her. She called for an end to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. She was interviewed when she was a senator running for president, when she was asked about abolishing the agency by an MSNBC reporter. She said that we should probably think about starting from scratch on enforcing immigration laws. Her spokesperson then said the senator was weighing, quote, a complete overhaul of the agency, its mission, culture, and operations. She told NPR that same year when she was running for president in 2019. She was willing to declare all illegal border crossers as refugees, even if it meant ignoring the law. Quote, I would not enforce a law that would reject people and turn them away without giving them a fair and due process to determine if we should give them asylum and refuge. She also didn't want them to continue remaining in Mexico, which was the policy. When we began to figure out that the asylum claims were just basically a game, that you jump the border illegally, and then instead of running away from the border patrol, you run toward them and say, I'm a refugee. You have to adjudicate my claim. And then you read them a script. I am fleeing political persecution. When the Trump administration realized that this was being used as an excuse to flood the system so that you'd have to release them into the United States, Trump leaned on the government of Mexico to accept the Remain in Mexico program, which is, okay, you say you're a refugee, we'll look at your claim, but you're going to wait on the other side of the border. And at that point, the game was up, and most of the people who claimed to be refugees went back to their land of persecution because they saw that it wasn't a way to jump the line and just immigrate to the United States without having to go through the legal process. And she was thinking of ways to help them. After becoming vice president, she repeatedly denied that there was a mass migration crisis underway at the southern border, and she refused to visit there. Yeah, you heard her when she was with Lester Holt. You know, instead of the way to answer that question, you haven't been to the border. Yes, but I will be very soon. And then you get back to Washington, you hastily organize a trip to the border. But no, she was holding out that she saw no need for her to visit the border while she was in charge of the border. You know what else she didn't do? This has just come out in the last week. The entire time that she was border czar, she never spoke with the border chief. She never spoke with the head of U.S. border enforcement, Raul Ortiz. She never spoke with... That was over a two-year period. And then the guy who replaced Ortiz, she hadn't talked to him either. And now that the border is a complete fiasco, a complete policy failure on the part of the Biden administration, and the fact that Americans are furious about it, she is now trying to say, I wasn't a border czar. Listen to this. I got to play this again. This is so much fun. This is a montage where you will hear reporters from CBS, ABC, CNN, and MSNBC, and I think PBS also, public broadcasting, PBS. So those five networks, you will hear reporters, correspondents, hosts refer to her as the border czar back then, meaning a couple years ago, and now claim, oh, she was never the border czar. Have a listen. This was Newsbusters. This was put together by Newsbusters Media Research Center. Great, great work.
Quote unquote, border czar. Vice President Harris was not a border czar.
Meantime, Vice President and border czar Kamala Harris facing some backlash.
What he said about Harris and immigration was not true. She was never appointed border czar.
And this will be her first visit to the U.S.-Mexico border region since she was appointed as the border czar by President Biden.
People are going to have to counter the misinformation. You already hear folks talking about the border czar. She wasn't the border czar.
President Biden tapped Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, to be the border czar.
Now, she wasn't the border czar. That's what Republicans labeled her.
No, Jonathan, those would be your colleagues. Those would be your colleagues. Okay, when you're put in charge of a project, you are often referred to as a czar. Okay, is it an actual government title? Well, no, we're not in Russia in the 1890s. Okay, czar simply means you're the person in charge of a project, and the project was the southern border. Let's continue.
very critical of Kamala Harris, especially in her role as border czar.
Now what she's up against is folks lying about her border record, calling her a border czar.
Kamala Harris, who was appointed as the border czar.
The Biden team didn't declare her the border czar. They wanted her to work on kind of the root causes of immigration.
There has been so much criticism against Kamala Harris. You know, she was the border czar.
Calling her sort of the border czar, which wasn't necessarily the case.
So the border, if they weren't planning to address it in a major way, do not make her your border czar. She met with some of the Northern Triangle countries, but nothing has effectively changed.
Yeah, nothing effectively changed because their policies, actually things did change for the worse.
Someone just kicked down the door, better run for the border. He's never gonna understand.
It's 10 minutes to 8 o'clock.
Better find a place to hide on the other side of the Rio Grande.
And a quick reminder, in just a few minutes, our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. I will be giving you the secret word of the morning. You will have until 9 o'clock to text that word to 206-421-5757. I'm going to give you that word right after our 8 o'clock headline. 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning in the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I'm so glad you are with me today. Thank you for letting me be part of your listening day. We are very grateful for that. And to show our gratitude, all summer long, we've been having our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. And here's how it works. We have a daily drawing for a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. And we have an end of the week drawing for a vacation. It's a different vacation every week. We've had vacations to Nashville, to Mexico, to England. And this week, it's a four-night trip to Napa. That's wine country, USA, right there, the California coast. Think Monterey, Carmel, Pebble Beach, and Spyglass for you golfers. They've got some winery tours set up for you. They're going to give you $750 spending cash. So that's what they have for you. But if you don't like wine and you don't like California and you don't like golf, okay, then keep the cash. That's $3,000. Again, we'll have this drawing at the end of the week. We're doing this in conjunction with our friends at Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores, right near the main drag of Ocean Shores, a great place any season of the year. So I'm going to give you a word in about 40 seconds. When I do, just text it to 206-421-5757. You can, again, between now and 9 o'clock, text the word. Only text it once, because once you do it, boom, you're locked in the contest. But if you want to enter the contest later this morning, you can do that, because we'll have a second word. And then that's from 11 to noon during Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins. And then during Lars Larson, he will have a different word at 1 o'clock. And then Ari Hoffman will have a different word at 4 o'clock. So you can enter four times today. But this is the most important. Here we go. The word is green. Green. G-R-E-E-N. As in putting green. As in green is the color of money. Green, G-R-E-E-N. Text that word to 206-421-5757. And you're in. Just that quick. Okay. A lot of stuff that we want to get to. Joe Biden addressed the nation last night, explaining not why he suddenly changed his mind about running. Remember, the Friday before the Sunday he dropped out, the Friday before, 3 days before, 2 days before, he had released a statement defiantly insisting that he was pressing on. Well, all that changed. How come, Joe? Well, here's what he said last night, part of what he said.
I revere this office, but I love my country more. It's been the honor of my life to serve as your president. But in the defense of democracy, which is at stake, I think it's more important than any title. I draw strength and I find joy in working for the American people. But this sacred task of perfecting our union, it's not about me. It's about you, your families, your futures. It's about we, the people. We can never forget that. And I never have. I've made it clear that I believe America is at an inflection point, one of those rare moments in history when the decisions we make now will determine our fate of our nation and the world for decades to come. America's going to have to choose between moving forward or backward.
Okay, well, cleaning up your mess on the southern border, yes, that will likely take a long time. If your party continued in power, it would never get fixed. At least with Mr. Trump, it's going to get fixed. And then the issue of deporting those who came here illegally. Then that becomes our next project in cleaning up your mess. So, yes, you're right. We're at an inflection point. We either let things get worse and lose our identity as a country, as a distinct country, we either clean up that mess or we let the mess get worse. And who better than your borders are to make things worse? I just love how they're now saying she was never the borders are. And here he is conceding that, yeah, he really is too old to continue.
I'm my party in this critical endeavor. I believe my record as president, my leadership in the world, my vision for America's future all merited a second term.
Yeah, that's why he was cruising to an easy reelection.
But nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation. That's the best way to unite our nation. You know, there is a time and a place for long years of experience in public life. There's also a time and a place for new voices, fresh voices, yes, younger voices. And that time and place is now. Over the next 6 months, I'll be focused on doing my job as president.
Well, why start now? It is, again, just a BS artist right down to the very end of his career. Just absolutely full of BS. Mr. President, if you really feel that way, why weren't you delivering this address in February? Why weren't you saying this in March? Why did you wait a couple weeks before the convention, before your national convention? Here's why. Because for you, it really is about clinging to power. And your wife, it's all about clinging to power. You were doing so long after it became apparent that you had absolutely no business running for another term. In fact, right now it's an open question whether you should even be remaining in the job. I don't know how you can be incapable of running for president, but perfectly capable of serving as president. But that's, again, another topic for another day. He had no intention of letting go. He's the exact opposite of George Washington. George Washington let go of power when everybody wanted him to stay in power. They thought he was a stabilizing force. He was the one unifying force. Adams and Jefferson hated each other, couldn't stand each other. Jefferson and Adams at each other's throat. Thank God we got Washington to keep everything together. Washington said, I'm leaving. Two terms is plenty. We are not a monarchy. We are a free republic. I'm going home. Joe Biden tried to cling as long as he could to the Oval Office. Couldn't give it up. And he essentially was given an ultimatum. Either you leave or there will be a fight to push you off the ticket. And you might survive that, but you will be hobbled as a candidate and you're going to lose anyway. So why don't you leave now and everybody tells you what a hero you are? Why don't you leave now and everybody says how lucky we were to have your great record? A record so great that you had no chance of getting reelected. So the interesting thing is, and this is the Bob Woodward book that is waiting to be written, the blow-by-blow, day-by-day, hour-by-hour fight where Biden finally gave it up. Because make no mistake, he had zero intention of leaving. And you know what? If Donald Trump had not accepted Biden's challenge to that June 27th debate, if Donald Trump had said, no, I'm not going to, I'll debate you after we both had our conventions. If he had done that, then the Joe Biden you saw at that debate would have actually been renominated. He would have survived. They wouldn't have been able to get him off the stage. And Trump's reelection would have been a cakewalk because, again, he would have eventually had to debate Donald Trump.
I believe it was Steve Moore the morning after the debate who called that right then and there, that agreeing to that debate prior to the both of them accepting their nominations was one of the biggest mistakes the Trump campaign could have made.
He said that on the show. You're absolutely right, Zach. He said that on the show. It was a bad political move to agree to debate Biden before the Democrat convention. Because there isn't any difference between what Biden has done and what Kamala Harris would do, except she, if anything, she's even more liberal. She's even more, quote, progressive, more left wing. But at least by, you know, showing a fresh face, and she's going to get a huge image makeover here in the next few weeks, the Democrats have a better chance of keeping the White House than they would have with Biden, you know, walking around with his imaginary friends, you know, talking to the sky. So, and I again, we've already seen it, and it's already almost comical how the Democrats are trying to polish her image by just pretending certain things didn't really happen. And by the way, it will work for a while. You know, she's raising a ton of money, not because people were relieved to see her, but because they were relieved to see anyone who wasn't Joe Biden. The major donors had started to close their wallets. Now they're opening them back up because at least now they got a chance. And there are some conservative commentators in some places who are going overboard on criticisms of Kamala, opening the door of sympathy to her. That's one thing you got to look out for, making sure that your criticisms of Kamala Harris don't actually boomerang into displays of support for her. Like I said, all they need to do is focus on her record. Yeah, I'm well aware of the whole situation with Willie Brown when she was in her late 20s and he was 60 years old and technically, anyway, married and serving as mayor of San Francisco, and how he ended up getting jobs for her, appointments to prestigious commissions that paid good money for her that should have gone to other people. I get all that. He was her mentor and more, but that's not going to change people's votes. What's going to change people's votes back to Trump is when people realize, oh, wait, the Biden record would be the Biden-Harris record would have been just what it is already if she had been calling the shots? And the answer is, yeah, Biden's record is her record. She was right there on all of these major policies. And that's what people don't like. They don't like the results of a failed economic policy. They don't like the results of a failed border policy. Biden is out there saying, well, we don't have any Americans who are in any wars, and thank goodness I did that. What we have is a much more dangerous world because of unsteady American leadership, right? The world is demonstrably, obviously, a less safe place today because of Biden, because he's playing games with the Iranians. Trump had a perfect policy regarding Iran. They were broke, and he was picking off their terrorist architects. And then all of a sudden, here comes Biden reopening the Obama policy of, hey, let's do a deal together. Let's see if we can break bread together and we'll lift sanctions on you. And where do you think that money went? Let's just say Hamas forgot to send us a thank you note, but they benefited from it. So did the Houthi rebels. So did Hezbollah. Look at our chaotic extrication from Afghanistan. What message did that send Putin? Do you think it's a coincidence that Putin invaded a few months after that fiasco that resulted in the deaths of 13 U.S. service personnel? Do you think Hamas would have even invaded Israel and slaughtered all those civilians if Trump was in the White House? So we don't have American troops fighting in any wars right now, but the world is far less steady, it's far less safe, it's far less stable. So on every single front, drugs, crime, energy independence, the price of energy, the price of groceries, the price of just about everything, things have gotten worse. And Kamala Harris is right there for the entire ride. So she gets to take ownership. Philip J. Vandervoort III takes ownership of his favorite segment of the day, social media, from socialists. And it's coming right up here as the John Carlson Show rolls along Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you, Huey. It's the John Carlson Show. 26 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, Philip J.'s favorite segment of the day, social media, from socialists.
Sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. That's what we do with the social media sweep. TheHill.com is reporting on what the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer, has said about Kamala Harris compared to the ticket of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And Gretchen Whitmer's comments come from a podcast. So here's what Gretchen Whitmer said in the podcast, quote, Kamala Harris in and of herself has more experience than the whole GOP ticket put together. They only have 6 years of public service experience. And I often point out to people, you wouldn't go into brain surgery and ask for the freshest neurosurgeon out of medical school. Experience is important. End quote. And do you see what she subtly did there about the 6 years of public service experience line?
I'm guessing she probably wouldn't have said that when Barack Obama ran for president after 4 years in the U.S. Senate.
That is another one of my initial responses as well. But what she very subtly did there, mm-hmm. she said, in politics, the only thing that matters is being elected and already serving in an office.
Yep.
Any of your private world experience, business experience, professional career experience, in J.D. Vance's case, military experience, none of those things count.
Matter.
The only things that count are if you've already served in office.
In politics.
And that, I think, is at the heart of the progressive Democrats' ideology that progressive Democrats are statists. The state should control everything. And the only way to serve that end is to make government bigger and bigger and bigger. And only by valuing the experience of people who have, quote unquote, been elected
yes.
into government.
Because bigger government shows how important they are.
Exactly. And that's where they place their emphasis on what matters. Really disturbing, really subtle, but really disturbing. And then,
well, really revealing.
The whole Obama thing has already passed, that he had very little experience as a U.S. senator, and then boom, is a prime candidate for president.
And gee, what do you know? A lifelong political animal, lifelong politician like Gretchen Whitmer would just be perfectly suited to be vice president if you looked at the world that way, that experience is all that matters in politics. Mm-hmm.
But only political experience matters. No mm-hmm. other private experience matters. And then you get to the heart of Joe Biden drawing a paycheck. I think your guest John Fund said a couple of days ago, 50 out of 54 years and never drawing a paycheck really in the private sector, so to speak. But only drawing a check from taxpayers via the government sector. We've been talking so much about the beneficial coverage Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Democrats tend to receive. Here are a couple more examples. We'll start with the Los Angeles Times. Los Angeles Times posted a story earlier this week on social media, says environmental groups ecstatic over Kamala Harris candidacy and California climate record. And I can only take that to mean that we're going to get more new Green Deal scams and schemes if Kamala Harris wins election to the U.S. president, retains control of the White House. And then this one comes from deputy editor at a handle called Inside Elections, but the social media profile for Jacob Rubashkin says formerly at NBC News, at CNN, and at Cornell Sun, which I take to mean the University of Cornell student newspaper, but I haven't completely checked on that. Jacob Rubashkin posted a video clip of Kamala Harris doing some sort of interview where she and the interview guest host are on TV. It looks like making cookies. They're mixing cookie dough in a kitchen. And Jacob Rubashkin points out, Harris has a whole series of cooking videos on her YouTube. And one thing I've learned so far is that she's got the one-handed egg crack down. So chalk that up as another professional achievement for Kamala Harris, that she can crack an egg with one hand, and a former NBC, former CNN news guy is very impressed by that. Like I said, this you can't make this stuff up, but no, this is the kind of fawning media attention
of course.
People on the network news outlets want to give to candidates and members of political parties that they subscribe to.
Compare the brutal news coverage of Joe Biden in the days leading up to his decision to cry uncle and get out of the race with what you're hearing right now about Kamala Harris. She cracks an egg with one hand. She made calls lining up delegate support, wearing a sweatshirt and ordering out a Howard University sweatshirt and ordering out pizza. My, how the media have changed their tone. 24 minutes to 9 o'clock. That means you have 24 minutes to text the word GREEN, G-R-E-E-N, GREEN, to 206-421-5757. Yes, that's our regular call-in and text-in line. Just text the word GREEN to that number, 206-421-5757. You are entered into our contest for an end-of-the-week drawing for a vacation to Napa. And if Napa doesn't grab your interest, how about $3,000 cash? Again, all you have to do is text a word. Do it by 9 o'clock, so you got plenty of time. It's not a race. And we'll have a daily drawing for a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. So thank you to our partners there, Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores. It's a very nice place, by the way. All right. Let's come back local here for just a moment. Nice article, interesting article in the Seattle Times about increasingly angry ferry boat passengers taking out their frustration on workers. Quote, the cussing, the screaming, very derogatory language. People saying, this is BS, close quote. The reason they're saying this is BS is that it is BS. We are short more than 40% of our ferry boats. Record numbers of cancellations. Record poor number of sailings not arriving or departing on time. And they say it's going to be kind of like this for years because of deferred maintenance. We've got too many ferries out of service because we've deferred maintenance for so long. And we're short of crews, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I tell you, a great person to talk to about something like this is our own radio legend, Mark Christopher, who is joining us by phone right now. By actually coming off on his day off. Yes, because he loves this topic. Mark, for years, lived in the Queen Anne Hill Magnolia area. Lived in Magnolia. Sold his house, what, 5 or 6 years ago, was it, Mark?
6 years ago, and Karen's dream was, you know, find a dream home. So we're over here south of Hood Canal.
South of, in the Shelton area and Christmastown, USA. And there they are enjoying a wonderful life, but he still works here, so he's got to take the ferry boat. Have you seen these changes? What have you noticed over the last year or so, Mark Christopher?
Well, let me share this with you, John and young Zach and Phil and everybody listening right now. I once heard, born and raised in Seattle, average was 4 trips a year on a ferry for the average person. Now, when I say one, you know, average trip of 4, that's round trip to and fro. I moved over here 6 years ago. John, just doing the math, and I'm being very conservative, I have over 2,000 sailings on Washington State ferries, okay? So this includes Southworth Fauntleroy, the Triangle. This includes Bremerton. This includes Bainbridge Island at times, if I miss my Bremerton boat, because we know that's only been a one-boat service now, almost 3 years. Sometimes I do Kingston Edmonds. And then for family, I'll do the Port Townsend Coopville. And that's an issue with the low tides. Here's what I see. I think, and this is just me, and I'd be anxious if listeners call in, those that don't take the ferry every day, just maybe a couple times in the summer, maybe in the wintertime or whatever, you've missed a lot of what they've been doing in working these ferries, building the new terminals. Prime example, John, is down here at Coleman Dock on the waterfront with that new entry. You have to go northbound on Alaskan Way and turn left in the ferry dock.
The
you
Seattle
dock go southbound. Right. Even on weekends, there's a police officer to stop people.
There's a That's Seattle the waterfront. One. Okay, the Seattle waterfront.
This is the first place people get irritated because you get backed up. I get backed up. We're 4 Saturdays now so far this summer. I've had to drive 82 miles home. It was so packed on the waterfront. Of course, we got a lot going on. So my first thought is, the people that are yelling are the ones that don't do the ferry on a regular basis. I have seen a lot of the ferry workers that work the docks that put you in certain lines to, you know, bring you on a ferry have moved into ticket booths. And I said, wow, this is a great promotion. Well, not really. I get yelled at a lot. I actually heard this about 4 weeks ago, and that woman went back to guiding cars on ferries. So again, and I'm getting a feeling too, that a lot of the angry people are on the Seattle side. the west side of Puget Sound, on the east side of the Sound going west toward the Olympics. This is where you get most of the yelling. It's going to be at Coleman Dock, Bremerton, Bainbridge. It's going to be up there in Edmonds going to Kingston. That's been a challenge with boats having two boat service recently. And it's also going to be the Whidbey Island. A lot of people have moved over, John, as you know.
Muckle-teal.
They've invested properties. They've invested in homes. They're commuting like me to and from work.
Okay, so one more time. The anger is coming from weekend revelers who are told they have to wait in line for 3 hours, or it's coming from regular commuters?
I think right now, and I'd like to see listeners call in, most of it and that I report is I see it is on weekends. Okay, I went to the Bremerton ferry with a backup of grabbing a Bainbridge ferry here during the 4th of July weekend. When I got there, they said, Mark, you can't get a Bremerton. It's already full. I said, give me the next Bainbridge. That's already full. This was at 12:20. I could not get a boat to Bremerton until 2:50 in the afternoon. Again, as you said and started the segment here, we have lack of ferries. We don't have enough ferries working. I also found out through sources I have, a lot of the complaint when you hear lack of crew, ferry not running, has to do with the engineers, not the actual crew members. And you've got to have a certain amount of engineers on every boat. You have to have crew numbers up there to handle the lifeboats, which we had one last weekend, I guess, at Edmonds. They didn't have enough crew for one of the rescue boats. So they had to limit how many cars could go on a ferry. A lot of rules, a lot of regulations we got to follow.
Okay. Here is a story from Fox 13 reporter Alejandra Guzman, who is pointing out, Ms. Guzman, that the real problem here is crews. That two things. They're short crews, and they are way backed up on deferred maintenance, which seems to be an ongoing problem in state and local government. They just keep neglecting the basics. Have a listen.
For nearly three decades, our ferries have been underfunded, with many vessels mothballed due to over $250 million in deferred maintenance.
Okay, that's not because of underfunding. That's because of terrible management. But let's continue.
Currently, only 15 ferries are in service out of the 26 we should have.
If it's running on time, great. If it's not, just be flexible.
Back in the day, folks used to set their watch by the ferry schedule. They were on time. Commuters could get to work, school, doctor's appointments, or just hop on for a joyride. That's not the case anymore. Last year, riders saw over 3,500 cancellations, tons of delays, causing them to be late or miss tasks.
Good afternoon. Working to fix our ferries.
Greg Nance, a candidate for the 23rd District, including the Bremerton, Bainbridge, and Kingston ferries, is taking this issue personally.
We've got $80 million in the budget for more crew and more maintenance.
He's been out canvassing at ferry terminals. He says it's simple. We know we need more crew, more maintenance, and more boats.
All of this is actually connected. If we want to make the right environmental investments, actually having new ferries helps us to better protect our environment. Having a strong workforce helps us to reliably operate those ferries.
The issue making waves in our gubernatorial race is Bob Ferguson is now promising to fix the failing system, expediting diesel ferries, with Dave Reichert criticizing him for claiming ideas that aren't his.
I was personally disappointed to hear Bob Ferguson's plan to purchase diesel-powered ferries. I think we need to be moving away from reliance on fossil fuels and not building another generation of ferries that are going to be reliant on them. And also, I think abandoning this electrification effort midway will just result in further delays.
This is the woman running against the state legislative candidate you heard moments ago. And again, she conveniently leaves out that electric ferries take longer to build and cost more than three times as much, which is interesting considering that they're scrambling to find money for the deferred maintenance.
As the back and forth continues, it's not an issue 23rd District candidate Bryn Felix says is top of mind for her or voters.
All right. So,
hey,
radio legend, go for it.
Yeah, just hearing that story there, too. 3,500 cancellations. Okay, let's go back. As I shared, I'm now a full-time ferry commuter. I've got 6 years of commuting, over 2,000 sailings. Again, I'm being conservative. Here's what I have for cancellations with my own use of Washington State ferries. I've had three boats that were held back because of a medical scenario. That is, we waited for an ambulance that had to bring somebody from the peninsula to get to Harborview. So that was a delay. We had one cancellation because of crew. And again, recently in the last few weeks, I hear the lack of crew is primarily engineers. And if anybody works for Washington State Ferry, I'd love to see you comment or share on that. I got this from ferry workers, by the way. The other issue is we once had one cancellation due to the fact they had a problem with the boat, something with the steering. They told me, Mark, hang on for 20 minutes, otherwise you'll have to drive around. They came back and said, you're okay. We got it fixed, but after this run, we're going to send it to maintenance.
Well, again, these are self-made problems, in my opinion. Poor prioritization, substandard management. They fired crew members who didn't get a COVID shot, even though many of them had proof that they had previously had COVID and therefore had been, you know, natural immunity and were working outside in many cases anyway. They still got fired. When Jay Inslee was facing shortages 2 summers ago, not this summer, not last summer, 2 summers ago, he did not rehire them, went out of his way to say he was not going to rehire them. So that set the stage for where we are now. And, you know, this is, you know, we've got a socialist ferry system. It's all public. There's no private competition. There are no, like, there's, you know, Ubers and taxis if you don't like taking the bus or light rail. There is no alternative for you. And because there's no alternative, there's no real incentive for them to up their game other than, quite frankly, people getting upset. Final word, Mark Christopher.
Yeah, it just, again, if money was an issue, and it sounds like we got funds to work on ferry boats, whether we go battery operated, whether we go just standard, you know, fuels or whatever. Many people still question the deal we get right now with 18 and younger getting free passage on a ferry. The ferry boat is not like your bus to get you from the school to your neighborhood. It's not like light rail maybe to get you from one part of the city to the other. So a lot of people question that. And you're only paying as a walk-on passenger, John, you're only paying when you leave the city. It's free to be a passenger to come into the city. It's always been like that,
right,
even for car and driver.
Mark Christopher.
Car and driver both ways.
Yes, yeah. Mark Christopher, our radio legend, calling on his day off. We thank you very much for that. We look forward to talking to you again on Monday. And, of course, they hear you over the weekend on KNWN on Saturday.
Happy Seafair.
You got it. Happy Seafair. That's another thing. Mark is the apostle of Seafair. He will be giving us updates on that as well. That's our radio legend, Mark Christopher. It is 11 minutes to 9 o'clock. Phones are ringing. People want to be heard. We're going to give you a chance. All right. You still have 7 minutes left to text the word green. Green to 206-421-5757. That's our word of the morning for our Take the Trip to Napa or Keep the Cash, $3,000. Again, we'll have that drawing at the end of the week. Cheryl has been listening to what we've been saying about fury on the ferry dock, and she wanted to add to what Mark Christopher, who's a regular ferry commuter, had to say. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi, John. Yeah, I just wanted to say that during COVID, our son bought a house over in Port Angeles. We have family over there.
Mm-hmm.
But he worked across the water by Edmonds. So every morning he would take the Kingston Ferry to Edmonds and go to work. Well, then when everybody got fired because they wouldn't get the shot, that's when it really started getting messed up. There wasn't anybody to run the ticket booth. So he would miss the ferry because nobody would be there and he'd be late for work. And it just got worse and worse. And then if he got to work, he'd miss the ferry. There would be no ferry to go back home. And he did this for like a year and a half, and he finally had to leave his house and move back over on this side of the water. And, you know, people will say, well, why did he buy a house over there? Well, he wanted to be independent, an independent adult, and you can't afford to buy a house over here. And he didn't mind the commute.
Well, besides that, supposedly he had a reliable form of transportation to get to and fro, which is the Washington State ferry system.
Exactly.
And I love what you pointed out here. Again, this is what I love about talk radio. The people who see reality on the ground, they're your real experts, like Cheryl's son. This problem began to get worse in earnest during the Inslee enforcement of firing employees who wouldn't get vaccinated. That's when you began seeing the cancellations. Those cancellations started a trend that has led to where we are now. Thank you, Cheryl. Get out there and have an enjoyable day. Let's you and me talk again tomorrow.